Parshas Shoftim and Parshas Vayeshanan. Where our objective today is to understand a pasuk in Shoftim, and that will be pasuk Perek Yudches, pasuk Tes Zayin. But before we get there, we will begin by trying to understand a few of the opening psukim in Vayeshanan, because one will help us obviously understand the other. So what we're going to do now is look at Perek Dalid in Vayeshanan, in psukim Hey and Vav. And our objective is to understand a single word, the word he, she, or it. So let's read the psukim slowly and carefully together and try to get a sense of what the Torah is telling us, because as we know, and as we've taught so many times, the Torah doesn't write in essay form. And from here we learn, this is trying to teach us that, da-da-da-da-da. The Torah tells us very cryptic information, and it's up to our chachamim, those that learn Torah, those that delve into it, to recreate the ideas behind the words. And we will speak about that too, the entire enterprise of all of the scholars through the ages, all of those that brought out chidushim and depth of understanding to the mitzvos, to the halacha, to the words in the pasuk. That will be part of what we speak about. So let's look at the pasukim. So here, pasuk hey. Re'eh, see, and this word figures greatly in these parashios, and in fact last year we spoke about the concept of re'eh, and you can do an interesting analysis when you listen to the Kriya. Notice when it says re'eh and when it says Shema, because it's all often alternating in these parashios between re'eh and Shema, see and hear. But re'eh, which we will get to, we will come back to this at the end, this word. Re'eh, see, Limadati eschem chukim umishpatim kasher tzivani Hashem Elokai. Moshe speaking. Look, I have now taught you many of these chukim, which you know are statutes that we perhaps don't quite understand why they must be. They are decrees by HaKadosh Baruch Hu regarding behaviors that don't necessarily make logical sense to us, such as shatness, kashrus, all kinds of taras hamishpacha, things like this, okay? These are all in the category of chukim. And mishpatim, which are civil law, ben adam l'chaveru, things that, at least on the surface, seem to be coherent. And I've taught you them as God has commanded me. And I've taught you them, lasos kain, to do that, to do them, bekerev ha'aretz asher atem boim sham alarishta, in the midst of the land that you are coming to inherit. And this is not our subject today, but just remember that the essence of the mitzvahs, the essential place for the mitzvahs, is Eretz Yisrael. And many of the mitzvahs we keep in Golus are as a zecher, as to keep us in practice. Okay, specifically the ones mentioned in Shema, which are tefillin and mezuzah, they are signposts, as Yirmiyahu says, to get you back. So when you come back, they shouldn't be foreign and strange to you. And we've spoken about mezuzah and tefillin as the remnants of the concept of kavod and ornaments, remember, that we keep with us, reminding us of the luchos, also locked in a golden aura, not for public display, not to be read or learned, just to be there. Remember, we've spoken so much about this, to keep us in practice so we're familiar with these ideas and these, you know, this type of living. So many of the mitzvahs we do here are lezecher, and the essential place to keep the mitzvahs, of course, is Eretz Yisrael. And then he says, Ushamartem v'yasisem. Now guard them and do them. Simple. We always associate Shemira, guarding, with mitzvahs lo taseh, things we guard against, with things we don't do, things we don't think or speak or say, restraint. That's Shemira, guarding. V'yasisem, doing, ases, mitzvahs ases. Ki hi chachmaschem, because she, or it is your chachma, the attribute of intelligence, wisdom, ubinaschem, insight, understanding, le'enei ha'amim, to the eyes of the nations. So, you shall watch them and do them, which means be strong, restrain yourself in the areas of restraint, and act in the areas of restraint. Do all the mitzvahs, los ases and ases, because it, or she, he, or it, is your chachma and your bina la'enei hagayim? Two questions. Is that why we do the mitzvos? Because it is your chachma and your bina in the eyes of the goyim? And secondly, what is the word he? Ki hi chachmaschem. What does he mean? What is the word he? Ki hi chachmaschem. What is your chachma or your bina? La'enei ha'amim. Asher yishmo'u neskol ha'chukam e'ela. They will hear all of these chukim. V'yamru, and they'll say, rak am chacham v'navon ha'gadaya gadol hazeh. How smart and how wise is this great nation. Now, what is your chachma in the eyes of the nations? Number one. Number two, do we do it for the nations? And number three, what will they see about us? They will say we are chacham v'navon. Think about a character in Bereishis. Who was described as chacham v'navon in the eyes of the goyim?
Yosef.
Very good. Yosef. He was considered by Paro a chacham and a navon. Why? Because he was able to interpret the dreams, he attributed it to Hashem, but that is not why they called him a chacham. Because he gave them very solid advice. He was wise. He understood how to implement the dreams that he was able to understand. Care, very important point here. Was Yosef a Navi? No. Therefore, his dream interpretation and his implementation, his understanding what to do with the information was from where? He was not a Navi. What was it? Where was it from? Chachma and Bina. He was a wise man. He was a genius. He was brilliant. He was intuitive. He was not a Navi. Yosef was not among the Nevi'im. Now, that means that what he spoke about, how he guided them, was a product of his Chachma and his Bina. However, did his Chachma and his Bina come from his Yirah Shemayim? Of course, they called him. He attributed everything, as you said, to Hashem. Always, Shem Hashem was on his lips at all times. He attributed all his wisdom to God, but because he was filled with Yirah Shemayim and only thought about what would be right in the eyes of Hashem, that lent him his Chachma and his Bina, and he impressed everyone, and he was superior and successful in everything he touched. Okay, and God was with him. Now, that's important, because the Goyim will see it, well, define what it is, and they will say, we are also Chachamim and Nevonim. It doesn't mean we're Nevi'im. We just have so much inborn wisdom. What does the word it mean? Ki hi chachmaschem. You tell me. What is your wisdom and your chachma in the eyes of the Goyim? Read the psukim again. Re'ei lemadati eschem chukim v'mishpatim. I've taught you chukim v'mishpatim as Hashem commanded me. Okay, so you should do them in Eretz Yisrael. U'shamartem v'asisem, and you should guard them and you should do them. Ki hi chachmasam, because it is your intelligent. What is it? Okay, so some say here, some suggest, what is the chachmaschem, the chukim, and the mishpatim? That's a problem. Because what would the word, what would be the grammatically correct word for hiheim? Like hiheim chayenu, va'orachimenu, because they are our life force and the source of our length of days. Kiheim chayenu.
One of them is so important, that's why it's
Kihi. So, but on the other hand, he modifies which words?
Shmira.
Shmira va'asiya. Okay? What we're saying here is, you know what our chachma is? Hi chachmaschem v'binaschem? Not the chukim and the mishpatim. Not the God-given laws. They are not your chachma in the eyes of the goyim. That the goyim will see your philosophy, your code of laws, your whole religious ideology, and they'll think you're so smart. No. They will think you're so wise and so bright, because what will they see? The Shmira and the Asiya. Your doing the mitzvos will be the source of how the nations will be impressed with you. The fact that you do the mitzvos, that behaviors you take, the way you go through your life, guided by mitzvahs, and they see your behaviors, your day-to-day actions, and they will think you're smart. which means to say this. This is a very significant, this is a critical basis of our understanding, and it relates to how we teach Torah, how we teach Bali Tshuva, how we look to, what we look for in the Torah for ourselves. How do most other isms or ideologies, societal structures get going? Okay, in every case, you have a concept, an ideology developed by some great thinker. Here, let's name a few in the modern age. Communism, nationalism, extreme nationalism, fascism, secular Zionism, you have, going back a little further, you have imperialism, you have even other religions, you have Buddhism, Mohammedism. You have Hinduism, you have Mohammedism, you have any ideology you want, okay? What happens? Usually somebody with a creative, innovative thinker, with charisma, comes up with an idea of the perfect society or maybe not even perfect for them, maybe not perfect for everybody, but what they believe is the way a society should function. They come up with a concept. Let's say communism. It's such an easy example. So then they believe that all people should be equal, and there shouldn't be the rich and the poor, and there shouldn't be class struggle, and everybody should be equivalent, and everybody should share the wealth, and therefore there won't be any jealousy, and there won't be any war, and there won't be any hunger. So then what do they do to start to ensure that this great, beautiful, utopian ideology can be implemented? They make laws. And then they set up, a committee sits down, and they set up all the laws that, if they would be enforced, they would lead to this utopian goal. Will they find a core of people willing to sacrifice for the idea, for the ism, for the concept? 100%. But in every single case, there's only a matter of time, and somehow the people will lose the ambition to sacrifice for the concept. And human weakness will take over. Even the Roman Empire fell after 600 years because the great dream of an empire that peace on earth, everybody united, could not be stronger than the basic human weakness, which would lead to corruption, to selfishness, to indulgences, where they would stop governing their empire because they're too busy with their own pleasure. In the end, human weakness takes over. The concept is there in theory, and the people are no longer motivated to sacrifice for it, and the great view collapses, the great vision collapses. So that is how every ism, every concept is built, starting with an ideology, laws then constructed to ensure that it should be successful. That is not how our religion is constructed at all. Hashem did not reveal on Har Sinai beautiful utopian concepts. He did not talk about peace on earth and moral purity and human satisfaction and happiness and being true to your soul and the aspirations of your soul and how best to free your soul and live, you know. There is no ideology discussed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us halacha, period, whether we understand it or not. The Aseret HaDibros are rules for everybody. And they're not the first rules we got. Hashem started the world off with rules back by Adam Sheish. There were 6 rules. Noach added the 7th, Avram added the 8th, and it kept building. And as Rambam says, Moshe came and added more. The humanity was given rules. They were not given philosophies and essays and dissertations on why. The rules kept us within a particular framework. How did the philosophy develop? We have, if you go to a Jewish library, there are hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of books on the shelves describing Jewish philosophy, all about Shabbos and Kashrus and Taras HaMishpacha and marriage and every halacha on earth that you want to talk about, even Paraduma, which has no official reasons. You can find a tremendous amount written on what it means and what it represents and the truths behind it. How did that develop? Where did that come from? It wasn't given at Sinai in open form the way we have it today in essay in all the Sfarim. If you lived in the year 700, all you needed was two shelves on your bookcase. That's it. And I'm talking about just 1,300 years ago. Because our religion is 3,300 years old from Sinai. But if you lived from then till just 1,300 years ago, you only needed two shelves on your bookcase. You had a Chumash, a Chamisha Chumash Torah, you had a Nevi'im and a Ksuvim, a Mishnah and a Gemara. That's it. There was nothing else. Where did everything else come from? So we started to write. Who were the first people who wrote? Well, in the year 800s, Rav Sadia Gaon put together, in terms of philosophy, emunot, videot. Around that time, you start having the first codifications of halacha. And then Rambam is a little later, sets down the halacha in the Yad HaChazaka in orderly fashion. Then he does the Mor Nevuchim and for philosophy. We started to write recently. Recently we started to write, in the last 1,300 years. And now we have a huge ocean of machshava. But the machshava was not given at Sinai. What was given at Sinai? Sinai was given the halacha. Did Moshe know everything that would eventually be written? Yes, I'm sure in some form or another he knew all the aspects of the halachas and what they mean as it's coming out today. But did the Jewish people, when they stood at Sinai and in the Midbar, in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, know, have this vast reservoir and ocean of machshava? No, they didn't. They had the halacha. They had or verbal mesorah. They probably knew many ideas, but not in the form we necessarily know today. It's been fleshed out by so many people over so many years. What that means is, we were given halacha, and the job of the sages, the chazal, was to take the halacha and slowly, with time, piece by piece, and it's an enterprise that builds and grows with every generation, to reconstruct from the halacha what is our philosophy. We don't start with a philosophy and implement laws. We start with laws, and our philosophy reveals itself through the law and the scholars of the law and life experience and new situations and new applications until you have today what we have, an ocean. So after a long journey through history, if you want to describe the Jewish people and what our and who we are and what we believe in and how our lifestyle and the behaviors and the laws we keep, what that made us into, now you can look back and say, who are the Jewish people? What have they contributed to society? We've contributed a huge amount in every area. In every area, in political theory, economics, finance, medicine, science, in every area. How did it come about that we are people that believe in taking care of the weak, even though we're strong? That we're people that believe in the soul, and we're people that believe in the freedom of a human being to choose, and we're not condemned to forces that are stronger than us, and we're stronger than even the mazel, so to speak. Who are we? What is our philosophy? We are a people that have lived through the ages. Our halacha has controlled us. And through the keeping of our halacha, even think about Shabbos and how Shabbos is so integral to the Jewish people. Think about Taras HaMishpacha. We'll get into all of these. What it does for marriages. Through thousands of years of these behaviors, the wisdom, the truth, the satisfaction has made itself clear. Not only to us who live it, but to those who can see it. But all of these philosophies were drawn out from the law. And the law and the philosophies grow and develop. So, are we greater than those generations before us that didn't have all of the machshava that we have? Let's say it this way. We say niskatnu hadoros. We've gotten smaller, right? So what does that mean? It's true. We've gotten smaller. We're further from Sinai. The people that lived before us were greater than us. Rambam was a giant. But even a midget standing on the shoulders of a giant can see a little further. There's no question. Just think about how machshava develops itself. You have writers today, Rav Moshe Shavira, who's the greatest of the Balei Machshava today. And he's drawing on who? The Maharal. But he's extending it for the realities of our generation. For new experiences, there are more points, more nuances, and every generation goes like that. because we've lived more, we've seen more. There's new applications. Think about halacha. There was no light bulb when they were at Torah at Sinai. So even the halacha of what is a fire was not applied and extended to that degree. The Jewish religion grows. It grows and our ideology grows. And did Moshe know everything? Yes. There's no question. Did he know it in the way and all the nuances that we know it? It wasn't applicable then. Chazal tell us that in halacha we have an unbroken Mesorah. But in Agadata, the ideas, we do not have an unbroken Mesorah, and we lost a tremendous amount that we received at Sinai. And it was up to the later sages till today to recreate our store of Agadata. So it is being brought out and it is being developed, and we do perhaps know more and understand more because there's more applications to it today. So what we have is this: Vashamartem v'asisem. Keep the mitzvahs diligently, the los ases and the ases. Ki hi chachmaschem. Because you're keeping the halacha, which will inevitably push you into a lifestyle which will bear its fruit and its benefits, which will then be explained and understood. That is your chachma and your bina in the eyes of the nations. When they see a nation behaving in a certain way, they will begin to understand that whether we know why or not, it is the essence of chachma bina. Now remember Yosef, it's not that we have nevuah, and it's not that we know what will happen in the future and we're doing these things because we understand God's mind. It's that these behaviors lead us, like Yosef, to Chachma and Bina, and help us then have insight into greater things. Help us understand human nature, the purpose of living. Let's give a classic example. Marriages have changed over the course of history. Today, marriages are very different than they were even 100 years ago. In the past, marriages were about survival, about protection. There were ages of romance, ages where romance wasn't even an issue, was just survival at hand. Today we have marriages which are unlike marriages ever before. There's independence, financial independence and intellectual independence between in both the husband and the wife very often. It's not necessarily about survival and necessity. It's about compatibility and love and a spiritual connection and all of that. So Taras HaMishpacha, it must have changed over the years in terms of how we understand it and what it does for a marriage, right? So in the olden days, there's no question that probably the Jewish people, being affected by the nations around them, maybe they viewed it as the impurity. Many of the nations around the world saw it as some type of physical impurity, some type of spiritual barrier. There's no question there's truth to that. But we have another aspect today. The aspect today is that in a world where women are finding a certain amount of independence and autonomy, here you have a situation where for 2 weeks out of the month approximately, she senses that the Torah gives her her own freedom, her own independence, her own individuality. She's not an object. This is very current. She doesn't belong to him. Absolutely, she's her own person. This is very current, and people today hear it, they understand it, and it talks to them. I mean, I once had a lady I was teaching who was 60, way past the age, and she wanted to know if she could still keep it anyway. Because she saw how beautiful it was, and the separation, and the reunion. So I don't think that was relevant 100 years ago. I don't know, maybe it was, but for today it speaks to us. And it's chachma, and it's bina, and it makes sense, and it works with what's going on in the world today. On the other hand, there is a danger here. And now my uncle, and I remember this, I remember hearing this many, many years ago, and I didn't quite get it, and I do get it now. My uncle was, Zichrono Livracha, was Rabbi Carl Rosenberg. So just for a little background, him and Noach Weinberg and Nata Schiller were all roommates in Ner Yisrael in the 50s, I guess. And they all were idealists, very smart, very ambitious people. And they started the first Baal Tshuva yeshiva in America outside of Chabad. And it was called Shema Yisrael, and it was in Yonkers, and I remember going there, and when they were lived in Yonkers at the time. It was in the 60s. Everything started right after 67. That was when the whole movement for a tshuva started, of course. Then, Noach Weinberg had his own ideas, and he broke off and went and started Eshet Torah. So my uncle and Nata Shuler made our Sameach. which were very different approaches. My uncle still had his own unique approach. He broke off, left Natashila with Ar Samech, and he went to make Machon Shlomo. And that has its own approach. It's in Har Nof, and it's a Baal Tshuva Yeshiva, and it's a very impressive place. And today his son-in-law, my cousin Beryl Gershenfeld, runs it, and you might know those names. In any case, my uncle Yank was adamant when boys unlike the other yeshivas, when boys came into his yeshiva, he refused to talk about Tamei HaMitzvahs, the reason for the mitzvahs. He said, if you want to know the reason, you're not ready for my yeshiva yet. When you want to know how to keep the mitzvahs because you're a Jew, you're ready for my yeshiva. He refused to teach the reasons for the mitzvahs. I think because of this idea, because he strongly believed that human beings will not really have the wherewithal to change their behavior because they believe in the overriding concept or philosophy, the beauty of the reason of the mitzvah. That's not how it works. How it works is being mekabel the Torah and the mitzvahs, period. And then the beauty and the understanding will come with experience and with time and commitment. You will feel it. You will know it. How do you explain to a person who's never kept Shabbos correctly what it feels like to keep Shabbos? We know that Shabbos is a product not so much of what we do, of the clothes we wear and the beautiful meals we eat and the zmiris we sing. We know that's part of Shabbos, but we know, and we've learned here, that the essence of Shabbos is the los ases, the 39 halachas, which are a lot of little halachas that come from it. There's hundreds of halachas. It's all the things we don't do, that we don't get involved in the pursuit of food and clothing and shelter, which essentially is the 39 melachos broken into three categories, the pursuit of food, clothing, and shelter, right? Except for hotzah, carrying, which is a separate category. But other than that, that's what it is. And we don't pursue these things. We don't get involved with our survival, which frees our neshama, therefore, it frees ourselves to think about other things because all those other needs are taken care of. So how do you explain the feeling of having the needs of your body put to rest, which is the essence of Shabbat Shalom, Shabbat Menucha, the peace, the rest, the calm of not having to deal with what your body wants and having your neshama free now? And that's expressed through the nicer clothes and the meal. How do you explain what it feels like? It's experiential. It's not something you can explain. It's something that has to be lived, and then its beauty and its wisdom are obvious to us. That's really the concept of the asiyah of the mitzvos through doing it as a nation. It is your chachma and your bina, and it becomes self-evident, and it becomes evident to everyone else. But it's not because you have beautiful concepts. They're not. It's that doesn't impress them. It doesn't impress us. It's not how we build our religion. Now, we up till recently, the way that people were machanach their children about was, why do you do this? Because the Torah says so. That's it. Today, it's a little bit difficult today. Our current environment doesn't necessarily allow for that type of chinuch. Why do you do this? Because Hashem said so. You have to explain. There's no question. But even though we explain, there's nothing wrong with explaining, but explaining is secondary to the commitment to do the halacha and the understanding that will come with it. Here's an example. A parent feeds their child only healthy food. No sugars and no, you know, preservatives and blah, 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 right? The kid doesn't know why, doesn't necessarily like it, doesn't like it. That's what they know. Maybe when they're 30 or 40 and they're feeling better and they're more vibrant and their circulation is better and their cholesterol is better and their eyes work and their ears work and everything works and they look around at their friends, all right, then they feel so grateful that they lived a healthy lifestyle because now they're full of they're still young and they're still youthful, right? It took 30 years or 40 years to appreciate the benefits of how they were eating and how they were living. Okay? It should be so easy. But the point is that's how the halacha works. Moshe is saying do them mitzvah saseh, mitzvah lo saseh, keep to them. Because that's your chachma, and that's your bina. And again, it doesn't give you nevuah, but it makes you capable of understanding the world and the things that come up in the world. I'm going to take your questions in 1 second. But on the other hand, let's stress this. It's not doing alone without Havana. Havana is necessary. Now, how does this apply? It applies simply. Klal Yisrael, when they heard the halachas, how did they answer? Nasa v'nishma is what we're speaking about. We will do, and then the simple explanation is we'll do, and then you can explain it to us. Okay? We're adding just a little nuance here. Nasa, we will do it. V'nishma, and then we will hear through our asiya, the chachma and the bina that will come to us, that will fill us, that will make us think differently. Because of the way we live, we think differently. We act differently. Then we will nishma, we'll be really able to hear what is at the core, what is the real will of Hashem, the mind of Hashem, the ideas of Hashem. Now it says here, re'ei, see, limadati eschem, I have taught you. The difference between hearing and seeing. See, hearing is like this class. You can only hear one point at a time, slowly, 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 until at the end, when we wrap up, the whole picture will come together as a totality. But seeing is different. You see, you can see 100 miles on a clear day. In an instant, you can see the whole landscape, the whole vista, the whole thing in front of you. Moshe is saying, you see, I've taught you chukim and mishpatim. And if you do them, you will, at a certain point, probably later in history, when you look back at who we are and what we've done, what we've come, you will see the whole thing right in front of you, how, what it did for you, what kind of nation it made you into. And you'll see the Chachma and the Bina, and so will everybody else. You'll see it as in a grand picture. It'll be obvious to you. So we have here what we're saying is that really the truth is that religion, true religiosity, true commitment, true Avas Hashem, which is asked for in Shema, takes patience, takes maturity, takes waiting. It's not obvious in the beginning. Now we can learn. We can learn machshava. We can learn the beauty of all the halachas and the mitzvahs. As we said, there's an endless amount of svarim in, and it can fill us with a sense of grandeur. But in every person's individual life, till we live the life and learn and study and look at our nation and read history and see how we compare to others and how much more advanced we are than everyone else, and how much more understanding we have of human nature than everybody else, and of our destiny and historical movements, how we can foresee things and understand things through chachma, it takes time, it takes maturity. Religion, in the end, is not for the weak-kneed and the impatient and the faint-hearted. It's just not. It demands that people take it slow and wait for things to be revealed. Now, this midah of waiting, there's a name for this midah. It is a midah, just like everything else, just like patience and forgiveness and all of that, is a midah called tocheles. People that wait are called miyachalim. We see it in the Shabbos tefillah. The midah of tocheles, my grandfather points out, by Moshe, when he comes to Hashem at the end of Parsha Shmos and says, "May az bati al paro, you sent me to paro, and it's only gotten worse, and you haven't saved them." My grandfather points out there that when Moshe was not perfect, and at that point was waiting patiently to see the Yeshua Hashem. There's also, this applies to people waiting for the Yeshua, people in the worst times of Tzaras, us waiting to see when it will finally come to a head, all of this history we've been living through. But it also applies to the individual in their religious growth. Slow, patient, it will come, it will dawn on us. If we know that everything we do with Yer Shemayim. Now this has an important implication. So does a mitzvah need kavana? The halacha is, mitzvahs don't need kavana, except for a few, which we'll talk about, like Shema, which we'll get to now. If you just do the mitzvah, you're mekayim the mitzvah if you didn't have kavana, believe it or not. It fits into what we're saying. Okay, but if that's minimal level. So if you want to have kavana, if you don't want to just do the mitzvah because it's a mitzvah, because you know it's, you have to be done, you get it done, you didn't have kavana, and that applies to, by the way, if you don't know if you made a bracha, if you didn't have kavana, still, you did the mitzvah, okay? Except for a few things, like tefillah. However, appropriately, a person should have kavana. What do we call kavana? Simply speaking, kavana means lahalacha, that I'm doing this mitzvah with the kavana to fulfill a mitzvah. It doesn't mean I'm doing this mitzvah because it will help, because it's creating malachim and shemayim and all of the reasons for the mitzvah that you find in the philosophy svarim. That's not what kavana is about. Kavana is I'm doing the mitzvah, l'shem mitzvah. That's enough kavana. Now, you want to think beyond that to the deeper meanings that we learn about the mitzvahs, gezuntehit. But essential kavana is just l'shem mitzvah. That's called kavana. Where does this not apply? This does not apply in tefillah, and it does not apply in Shema Yisrael. The whole essence of tefillah is avoda shebalev, is connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's all kavana. Person, if you daven without kavana, now, you're just babbling. It's just words. It's meaningless. Now, the Chazal were gentle with us. They knew it's hard to have kavana for the whole tefillah. So there are two essential parts. You must have kavana. Kriya Shema and the first paragraph of Shemoneh Esrei. However, if a person said the first paragraph of Shemoneh Esrei without kavana, which means they didn't have Perush HaMilas, they didn't know what every word meant, the halacha in the end is you don't repeat it. Why? And this is what Chazal say, because you won't have kavana the second time either. So what's the point? But regarding Shema, it's nothing without kavana. It's meaningless. It's a waste of time. Because Shema is Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemaim, and that's what we're going to speak about now. By the way, what I just taught you about the Masem as the source of your Chachma comes from the Sfas Emes, Parshas Veschanan. He basically says clearly that the Asiyah of the mitzvahs is due to when we do the mitzvah, Zochim L'Chachma. You are zochet to chachma hamitis, to true chachma. The zeikar hachiluk sheben hachachme ha'umos, afilu chaside umos ha'olam. This is the difference between us and even the best of the others, that kafi hachachma shalahem osim l'tamim devarim tovim. In others, they, because of their chachma, their ideas, they can implement good laws. It's true, but that's what makes us different. We don't implement laws based on a philosophy. We start with laws and let the philosophy reveal itself via the laws, as long as we're committed to the laws. This is really comes from the Sfas Emes. But now, when I want to look into Parshas, into our Parsha here in Shoftim, we will see the application of this idea. And this comes from my grandfather, what we're going to learn now. So turn to Shoftim. Perek Yudches Pasuk Tes Zayin. Moshe is reminding them about Har Sinai, and he says to them in Yudches Tes Zayin, Kechol asher sha'alta me'im Hashem elokecha b'chorev b'yom ha'kaha lemar. He says to them, according to all that you asked of Hashem, page 1032. According to all that you asked of Hashem in Chorev on that day, saying, he's reminding them of an incident that happened in Har Sinai when they said to him, Lo Osef Lishmoa Eskol Hashem Elokai, we can no longer hear the voice of Hashem, the Esh HaGedola, this great fire, Esh HaGedola Hazos La Era Od Velo Amos, we can't see it anymore, we don't want to die, you go Moshe, you speak to Hashem and tell us what he said. Remember that request? Okay. So Moshe's reminding them about that. You said, no, we can't hear it directly from Hashem. You tell us what Hashem wants. And that is really the whole core of what Sefer Devarim is about. We spoke about this, that at that time they said, Moshe, you go. So Moshe went up. He came down. There's already the whole story with the Egil. So he broke the Luchos, went back up for 80 days, came down. Hashem said, Salachti, started immediately building the Mishkan, which is a kapara for the Egil. And then right on the heels of that was the episode of the Meraglim, and then they ended up in the desert. So now Moshe is teaching them in Sefer Devarim everything he heard up on Sinai that he never had an opportunity to teach them, and that it wasn't relevant to teach them because it had to do with Eretz Yisrael, keeping the mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael. So he says, you speak and tell us. And that's when the whole thing started. Now, when Bnei Yisrael said that to Moshe, you go, we can't hear Hashem anymore, it's too much. You go and come back to us. What was that? Had they heard the voice of Hashem, would they have received a different intensity of the Torah? No question about it. What they heard now was the mitzvahs given by Moshe. If they were able to hear the voice of Hashem entirely, would they have had more, like they would have been Moshe Rabbeinu? Did Moshe Rabbeinu know more than them, understand more than them? Of course he did. They forfeited something. They couldn't withstand it. They're not faulted for it, but they forfeited something. all of the Chochmah and the Bina that's come out through the ages that we've spoken about, would they have had a sense of more of it had they heard Hashem directly and not just the laws from Moshe? What do you think?
Sure.
Yes. But they forfeited this. Here's the point. They're not blamed, but did they know what they were forfeiting? Yes. And did it take all of history to kind of recreate what they forfeited? Yes. What is the indication in the pasuk that they knew what they were forfeiting? My grandfather points out there is a critical word here, and you will see it many times in relationship to Hashem's demands from Klal Yisrael, what Hashem wants from us. Look at the pasuk. He says, it says here, Kachal Asher Sha'alta Me'im Hashem. There's two ways to express somebody asking for something from someone. You ask for something Me'im or Me'es. What do you think is the difference of asking for something Me'es or Me'im? Acha Sha'alti Me'es Hashem. I've asked for one thing from Hashem, or Sha'alta Me'im Hashem. What do you think is the difference? And it's, keep this in mind every time you see these words of what Hashem wants, or we ask for Hashem, it's relating to what we request, or Hashem requests from us, or we request from Hashem.
Me'es is together with Hashem.
Yes.
I'm not just asking of it, but I don't want the connection.
Okay.
It's with who halach es halakim halach.
Okay, so it shows more connection.
Okay.
Yeah.
Me'im Hashem is part of Hashem.
Me'im Hashem is part of Hashem. Okay, remove, good.
So whether or not you deserve it, it is that you don't deserve it, but God has given you the gift. It may be Hashem that you are together with Him.
Okay, everyone is understanding here. We're seeing that Me'im is closer, and Me'es is a distance. And my grandfather points out this yisod, this basic fundamental rule. When we ask for something Me'es Hashem, what we're asking for is something that Hashem will give us, and it's ours. And we retain it. Acha sha'alti me'es Hashem. What I want from Hashem is shifti beveis Hashem. I want to dwell in the base Hashem. I want to be in the presence of Hashem. That's mine. When we ask for something me'im Hashem, that means it still remains im Hashem, and we're borrowing it for the moment. For example, he brings an example by Chana. She says, Eli says to her after she davens for the Shmuel, L'chi l'shalom, go in peace, V'elokei Yisrael yitein, and the God of Israel gives you eshelatech, what you ask for, asher sha'alta me'imo, that you've asked from him. Now when Shana asks for something me'im Hashem, it means she has to borrow it, but it remains with Hashem. What's the proof? How do we know that? That's true. Because she gave him back. She only asked me'im Hashem, but really Shmuel belonged to Hashem. Okay? It says in Parshas, borrow also, exactly. Ekev, Ata Yisrael, this is Ekev, Perikud, Pasuk Yud Beis, and now Israel, Ma Hashem Elokecha Shoel Mi'imcha, what does Hashem ask from you, which means it still stays with us, Ki'im L'yira, nothing but to fear Him. How do you explain that Pasuk? What does Hashem ask Mi'imcha? He wants to borrow it, you should have Yira. What is that telling us? My grandfather's a beautiful word here, huh?
Hashem doesn't have Yira. It's one of the riddles he doesn't have.
My grandfather says here, he says, it's very hard for a human being to produce all the Yira Shemaim they need to get through life correctly. So Hashem says, give me a little. Give me a little Yira Shemaim. Let me borrow a little from you, so to speak. Send a little in my direction. And then I'll return you Yira Shemayim, I'll help you, I'll give you Yira Shemayim, I'll bestow Yira Shemayim, but I can't do it for you. I'll call Bidei Shemayim, Chutz Mi Yira Shemayim. Let me have a little bit of Yira Shemayim, not everything, not Me'es. You can't ask people to give Yira Shemayim Me'es, to give it entirely. That's no longer, we've given it completely to Hashem, we've been able to release a flow of Yira Shemayim. So Hashem says, let you give me a little bit, and then I will give you Siyata Deshmaya, I'll help you, you know, the concept in Gemara and the Medrash, open me a little hole and I'll open you a huge opening, right? So Me'imcha means it basically stays with the person. So here, when Klal Yisrael said to Hashem, you made a request, Me'im Hashem, which was, don't speak to us so clearly, we can't handle it. What does that mean? Was that asking Was that an absolute request for eternity, that that should be the nature of the relationship between Hashem and Klal Yisrael, that we shouldn't hear Hashem directly, it should all go through someone else, through Moshe? No. It was the request for the moment. It was the request for the moment that we can't hear you. But Klal Yisrael knew what they were forfeiting, because clearly if they would hear Hashem directly and they'd be like Moshe, they'd have all of the wisdom and all of the depth and all of the knowledge from Hashem directly. They'd be Nevi'im of the highest order. But at that moment, Klal Yisrael was in its infancy and couldn't really receive this. So they asked Me'im Hashem, just for a moment, to borrow for a second one request, don't speak to us. But that doesn't mean that in the future, when we prepare ourselves and we live through all of history and we begin to see the truth on our own, then we will want once more to hear from you. We will be able to raise ourselves up to the level as a nation where we could withstand hearing from you directly. And that's what we ask for every Shabbos in Kedusha. What do we say? What do we say in Kedusha? What do we ask to hear Hashem again? What are the words? Hu yashmienu, right? Here we ask. Hu yashmienu barachamav shenis. He will let us hear in his great rachamim a second time. Le'enei kol chai, to the eyes of everyone. What are the next words? Right? Lios lachem lelokim. What he spoke to us at Sinai, that he'll be a God for us. We ask that we should hear it again. And by the way, that is the explanation of the second pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Yishakeni Meneshikos Piu. Let him kiss me with full kisses of his mouth. That's the second pasuk in all of Shir HaShirim, in the beginning of Shir HaShirim. And Rashi says there, what does it mean that Klal Yisrael and Hashem were kissing mouth to mouth? That we heard Hashem speak to us peh el peh, and with mouth to mouth. And Shir HaShirim is a desire, a yearning of Klal Yisrael to once more, again, be in that intimate closeness with Hashem, which they couldn't maintain in the beginning. That's what we ask for, which means to say that we have lived and we have reconstructed the Chachma of Hashem, the Bina, the understanding. And we hope that it has changed our nation and developed us to a point where we are capable of one day standing again and hearing what we couldn't hear. We couldn't hear it. When you're an infant, you cannot hear the benefits of our simple example of the healthy food and the life of restraint. You just can't hear it. But when you live it, you can hear it. And I'll end with one thought and I'll take your questions. My grandfather says back in Yisro, another development of the idea of Nasa v'Nishma. When Klal Yisrael said Nasa v'Nishma, so everyone knows this, where it tells us that the Malachim said, what? No, not what he's giving them, the Torah, different. How do they know this secret? Because that's what the Malachim do. They say Nasa v'Nishma. So he explains like this, and he says that, you know, we say in Kiddush every day in davening, Nosnim l'reshus zeh l'zeh l'haktish l'yotzum. All the malachim are up in Shemayim, and they give permission one to the other to say Kedusha. Well, what is that? It's kind of describing what's happening in heaven. I mean, what does it mean? They're standing in line giving permission. What is happening? Why do they have to give permission to that the malachim should say Kedusha? So, he says that the malachim we're talking about here are the malachim that are the neshamas of the righteous that come into Shemayim, which have an opportunity to say Kedusha, which means to be makdish Hashem, which means to have clarity and understanding beyond any human comprehension, and to see the truth of it all and to express it. He says that when neshamas leave this world and they enter into that world, especially a neshama that cared here, that did the mitzvos, that tried that was always yearning, was a mevakesh Hashem, that tried to do their best in ases and los ases, and daven and try to connect to their creator, though it's hard here. That neshama, when it comes to that world, all it wants to do is rush, so to speak, to the kiseh kavod and see it all and understand it all and fill itself up with everything it didn't understand and the shechina and the presence of Hashem. There's a danger, though. If the neshama rushes too quickly, so to speak, to the kiseh hakavod, it will be consumed in the intensity of the light, the truth. the essence of the power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence. So the other malachim are in charge. The malachim that have been there before are in charge of slowing down the new neshamas and telling them to wait in turn till they orient, till they acclimate, till they get used to this new world. By the way, it's very similar to a baby. When a baby is born, can't see quite right, can't hear quite right, with time it orients and all the senses develop and it begins to understand, right? So to a neshama, it needs time. When the neshama is ready, the other malachim give it rishus, lahakdish, the yotzram, to give say kedusha to their creator. Now, why do they make the neshama orient slowly? Because if it doesn't, it will not survive. The neshama won't survive the experience. And you know the neshama is a bria. It's a created thing. It's a created thing. It's not Hashem. It is created. We say every day, L'kai neshama shenasata b'ata barasa, you created it. It's a bria. It isn't God himself, so it can be destroyed. It could be consumed. It's not quite the Shekhinah itself. It isn't. So the neshama must get used to. It says kedusha in the back. It gets used to being in the presence, so to speak, of the Shekhinah slowly, slowly, until it's ready, and then it can survive the experience of saying kedusha. So my grandfather said that's the secret of Nasa V'Nishma, and it fits into everything we said today. We do the mitzvahs asiya, asiya, asiya. We don't necessarily, we can't, the Klal Yisrael at Har Sinai weren't ready to hear what Moshe could hear. They were not prepared. It would consume them. The Gila Shechina was too intense. It's like looking at the sun with open eyes. It will burn out your corneas, your entire, our eyes won't work anymore. It's not possible. We don't have the apparatus, and we didn't as a young nation. But with a life, a long history of Klal Yisrael and every individual in it, keeping the mitzvahs, that's the asiya, getting used to it, orienting, learning, understanding, then we are preparing ourselves for the nishma. When we will hear one more time, and this time when Hashem speaks to us, we will all hear it. And not only will we hear it, it will be true to our experiences, to what we've learned. When Hashem reveals the emes that lays behind the mitzvahs, we'll know it. We'll know it because we lived it. It'll be an entirely different experience. So we live through life as Jews doing the naseh with patience, almanas, in order to one day nishma. And that's, by the way, what happens, and with this we'll end and I'll take your questions. That's what we do in our regular life. You know, we talk about tzaddik v'ralo. We talk about isurim. We talk about the strength to that Hashem doesn't give us things we can't withstand. Why do we do this? We fortify ourselves all our life, let's say in terms of this type of thing, so that if chas v'shalom, tzaras hits us, we'll have reservoirs on which to draw on so we won't fall apart. We'll have deep reservoirs of philosophies that we've integrated, so when something hits us, we'll have tools to use to get through it. That's naseh, so that when it comes, we can hear it, we can receive it. It's like lahav de la fire drill. You go through the motions a lot of times, so when the moment hits of crisis, of emergency, you don't go into a panic and lose yourself and die in the chaos. You know what to do. You know the steps to take. We learn for this purpose, so that when things come upon us for bad and also for good, because people also live through experiences where the Yad Hashem is very clear in their life, where Hashem Siyata Deshmaya is guiding them. And if they're not prepared before with philosophies that tell them this, they'll just let those opportunities pass right by and not harness them and not take advantage of them and not let them change them, because they have no apparatus to hold on to those experiences. But if somebody lives a life of these concepts and then something happens to them that fits into this idea, they're filled with joy and satisfaction and closeness to Hashem, and their eyes are open. It all depends on the preparation. And that's what Moshe is saying, ki hi chachmaschem, the asiya, which is the preparation.